Hello and welcome to the Semantic Cybersecurity Brief, our fortnightly podcast where we discuss all things cybersecurity. I'm Dick O'Brien, and joining me today once again is Semantic Threat Researcher Bridget O'Gorman. In this week's podcast, we'll be talking about ransomware, quite a lot about ransomware actually, because there's been a lot going on, including the apparent departure of some well-known threats and the possible reappearance of some long-departed ones.
Yeah, but first, Dick, I suppose let's turn to what's probably been the main cybersecurity story of the week so far anyway, and that's the discovery of the so-called Folina zero-day vulnerability in Microsoft Office.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about this because I think it's probably been one of the most significant vulnerabilities to have been uncovered so far this year. It's gotten a lot of coverage in the press. There's been a lot of blogs written about it. But having said that, I think there may have been an even bigger media storm about it had its discovery not come just before the Memorial Day weekend in the US. So the vulnerability was originally discovered by Japanese security firm NowSec, who tweeted about it on Friday of last week, that's May 27th. And what happened was that they found a malicious document which was using Microsoft Word's remote template feature to load HTML and then use the Microsoft MSDT feature to execute malicious PowerShell scripts. So what is MSDT, you may ask? Well, that's a question I think a lot of people have been asking this week. And it stands for Microsoft Windows Support Diagnostic Tool, and it is a component of Windows itself. So that's how it was found. And then the baton was well and truly picked up by the security researcher, Kevin Beaumont, who's a very well-known figure in the industry. And he wrote a really good blog that explained why this is a vulnerability and why it was so significant. So put it very simply, Microsoft Word has the capability to retrieve templates from remote locations. And then attackers were able to leverage this feature to retrieve their own HTML and then use MSDT to start running PowerShell scripts. And as Beaumont kind of baldly stated, this should not happen. So yes, this is a zero day. It now has its own vulnerability number, CVE 2022-30190. And it's a zero day that is particularly noteworthy because of a few things. So unlike a lot of threats that are delivered through Word documents, you don't even need macros enabled for it to work. And secondly, and probably even more importantly, in some cases, you don't even need to open the document for it to work. And that kind of makes it what you'd call a zero-click exploit. So apparently, if you make the document an RTF file rather than a Word doc file, the exploit will just run from the preview pane. And I guess that right there is why this is quite a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, nothing inspires fear in people like the word zero-click exploit, really. But I guess one question before we get further into it is, where did the name for this come from?
Yeah, it was Kevin Beaumont himself who dubbed it Folina. So apparently there's some reference in the code to the number 0438, and that is the area code for a small town initially called Folina. And it's kind of a joke, I think, on his part. He was trying to poke fun at the people who decide that every newly discovered vulnerability needs a cool name and a logo. And indeed, he created his own logo, which I think is just a picture of the church in Molina with Folina, picture of the church in Folina with the word Folina imprinted on it, which he said he created using MS Paint.
Very funny. And so this vulnerability that is being exploited in the wild, right?
Yeah, unfortunately it is. So the original discovery by NowSec was in relation to something they were investigating. And the document containing the exploit was uploaded from an IP address in Belarus. And it also seems that this attacker, or at least an attacker, it might be another attacker, had known about this exploit for at least a month because it subsequently transpired that in April, a file that was masquerading as an invitation for an interview with Sputnik Radio was used to target a user in Russia. And this file was uploaded to VirusTotal, and it had the exploit in it. So somebody knew about it for at least a month. But of course, the thing about zero days is that the minute they become public, lots of attackers rush to try and exploit them before they get patched, or after they get patched, before end users get around to applying that patch. So for example, very quickly, Proofpoint found evidence that there was a Chinese APT group called TA413, and they'd been using malicious URLs to host zip archives, which contained Word documents, which exploited the vulnerability. I'd say that the victims were being directed to the URLs using phishing emails, and the campaign is masquerading as coming from something called the Women Empowerment Desk of the Central Tibetan Administration. TA 413 apparently has quite a track record of targeting organizations in Tibet, so probably business as usual for them. But yeah, they're not going to be the last group. I think you're going to see lots of people trying to exploit this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say you're right there for sure. But has this vulnerability been patched now, or is there anything people can do to kind of mitigate against it?
No, at the time of recording, so I'm not saying at the time that you're listening, but at the time of recording, it hasn't been patched. But you would imagine that this is being prioritized. Of course, security vendors such as ourselves have baked in protection against exploits into their products. And what's more, there are also some mitigation steps you can take to prevent exploitation. And that is basically disabling the MSDT URL protocol by deleting the relevant registry key. And I think this mitigation was originally hit upon by an analyst called Will Dorman, but then Microsoft themselves came out with their own mitigation advice, and they essentially said do the same thing. They think that that's the best thing to do themselves as well.
Okay, sounds like that's good advice though.
Yeah. Hopefully we get a patch soon, but it's definitely one to keep an eye on. So let's turn to ransomware. We said we were going to talk about a lot about ransomware on the podcast today. And I think the last time on the podcast, we were talking about Costa Rica being targeted by the Conti ransomware group. But there's been a few new developments in relation to Conti, hasn't there?
Yeah, in relation to that whole kind of Conti and Costa Rica and the whole thing. So I suppose firstly, Costa Rica's public health service, which is known as the Costa Rican Social Security Fund, or the CCSS, had its services forced offline when it was hit by what was a high ransomware attack on Tuesday of this week, the 31st of May. And the government agency publicly acknowledged the attack via a statement on Twitter, where it said the attackers had accessed the network in the early hours of that morning. And employees of the health service in Costa Rica said they were told to shut down their computers and to unplug them from the networks, basically after all the printers on the CCSS network began printing pages of gibberish, essentially, when the attack started. However, the CCSS did say that it didn't believe that any citizens' private health information had been compromised, and an investigation is still being conducted into the incident, of course. But at the moment, a lot of kind of health services and some clinics and that kind of thing are offline, and it's not clear yet, you know, how long it may take for affected systems to be back up and running. And obviously this is quite a recent incident, so I think the overall impact of it is not particularly clear at this stage, but it does seem to have caused a significant disruption. Now I suppose you may be surprised that this is a high ransomware attack either rather than Conti, as that is obviously the group that has been carrying out attacks aimed at the government organisations in Costa Rica for the last while, which is what led to Costa Rica declaring a state of emergency following threats from Conti to overthrow the government, which was what we were outlining in our previous podcast, I think, Dick.
Yeah, that's right. And so is it clear yet, or if this is a separate attack, or do we think they are actually linked?
Yeah, so it appears most likely, I think, that this attack is linked to the recent Conte activity, either potentially an affiliate working with both groups, both the Conte and Hive groups, or both the Conte and Hive groups who we track in Symantec as Minor and Pinion, respectively, perhaps working together. Because there was a major development a couple of weeks ago, I think just after we put out the last podcast, possibly, when our colleagues at Advanced Intel published a report where they claimed that the Conte ransomware operation had actually shut down in order to split into a number of smaller groups. So Advanced Intel said that Conte's internal infrastructure had shut down, along with its chat servers and its Tor admin panels, and that while its data leak site was still live, nothing else really appears to be happening behind the scenes. So Advanced Intel researchers said that Conte was doing this in order to split into a number of smaller kind of cells, basically, in order to reduce the chances potentially of being disrupted by law enforcement, probably kind of driving this activity or this action. And Advanced Intel also said at that time that it may also, Conte may also be opening partnerships with a number of smaller ransomware operations. And it mentioned at that point Hive, as well as other operations such as Hello Kitty, Avis Locker, Black Cat, and Black Byte. And Advanced Intel also said that it believed that Conte's, you know, quite dramatic kind of dispute with the Costa Rican government, you know, threatening to kind of overthrow it and stuff, was merely, you know, a smokescreen that it kind of deployed to distract from this reorganization. With the researchers saying that they saw communications indicating that kind of getting paid out, you know, was never the point of the attacks for Conte that they were carrying out in Costa Rica. Advanced Intel said that the agenda to conduct the attack in Costa Rica was for the purposes of publicity instead of ransom. And they said they'd seen internal communications among the Conte leadership that kind of confirmed this.
Okay, that's interesting context to put on it. So do we now think that Conte and Hive are actually working together, or at least they're maybe being deployed by the same affiliate or affiliates?
Yeah, that does seem to be the conclusion we can draw here, I think, anyway, certainly to some degree. You know, apart from this incident in Costa Rica, there have also been a couple of recent occurrences where both Hive and Conte have listed the same company on their data leak site, you know, indicating that there may be a link between the two, that they both seem to have access to the same kind of data breaches and things. So when we look at, I suppose, when we think about this, like, why would kind of Conte make this kind of move? It's potentially because they might be trying to rebrand by folding themselves into existing ransomware families. You know, it's probably in an effort to most likely to evade sanctions. You know, Minor, the group behind Conte, which is also known as Wizard Spider, they develop Conte. They're also well known for developing familiar names like Ryuk and Diabol ransomware, as well as Trickbot and Bazaar Loader. And they are widely believed to be based out of Russia. And Conte as well, it did post a message early on in the kind of ongoing Russian invasion of Ukraine, stating that it would retaliate against any Western nations that targeted Russian organizations with cyber attacks on critical infrastructure while the invasion was ongoing. And the group's position and its kind of stated support of Russia mean that payments to it may fall under sanctions that were announced as the start of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So this segmentation, this kind of rebrand, you know, slightly aimed at disassociating it basically from potential sanctions and maybe reducing the chances of the entire operation being taken down by, you know, some law enforcement activity. I mean, Minor Wizard Spider, you know, it's definitely one of the largest and probably one of the kind of most long-standing cybercrime groups that we see operating at the moment. So certainly wouldn't make a move like disbanding Conte or cooperating more with other ransomware groups if it didn't feel it had, I suppose, compelling reasons to do so.
Yeah, I mean, the sheer size of the Conte operation meant that they obviously had a target on their backs. So it's interesting to see them try and preempt any future action. So while Conte might be winding its brand down, it appears that another ransomware name is back after something of an absence.
Yeah, so it's been reported that the Clock ransomware operation has reappeared after quite a long period of inactivity. So Clock, which is operated by a group that we track as Snakefly, it kind of disappeared from the scene in November 2021. And it was widely assumed that the operation was probably gone for good. And, you know, this wouldn't be that unusual as ransomware kind of does come and go all the time. And also some members of the Clock Gang were reported to have been arrested by Ukrainian authorities in the middle of last year. However, according to a new report from the NCC group, the Clock ransom restraint did become active again in March this year. And by April, NCC said it was the fourth most active ransomware group that was tracked by the company, and it carried out 21 attacks, with its most targeted sectors being industrials and technology. And NCC said that this increase in Clock's activity seems to suggest that it had returned to the threat landscape, and also warned that organizations in its most targeted sectors should consider the threat type a live threat, really, and be prepared to take action against it if necessary, and make sure they're protected against it. However, some other threat researchers have speculated that perhaps this, kind of recent little surge in activity might be kind of a case of Clock more or less wrapping up its operations before kind of retiring completely. As part of this process, it's likely it would publish data previously kind of unpublished victims, things like that. So I think this activity would probably need to persist for a bit longer before we can say definitively the Clock is actually returned to the scene.
And another familiar name, Revo, another blast from the past, was also in the news this week.
Yeah, so a gang claiming to be the Revo ransomware group carried out a distributed denial of service attack against a victim in the hospitality sector in the last couple of weeks. So this report came from Akami's security intelligence and response team, who detailed the attack in a report and said it was pretty kind of run-of-the-mill DDoS attack, consisted of a simple HTTP GET request with a message then demanding payment in Bitcoin in exchange for stopping the attack. And interestingly, it did also include actually an additional request for the company to stop operating in a specific named country. So the Revo of Nokibi, also known as Leafroller, ransomware gang, were obviously hugely active ransomware for a long time, but they were forced offline in October 2021 following law enforcement action, and several of their members were reported to have been arrested in Russia in January this year. However, some recent activity had suggested that the operation may be coming back online. In April, it was reported that the group's leak site had come back online, while a new sample of the ransomware was also reportedly spotted in the wild. However, despite those reports, no recent activity of kind of significance has been seen coming from the Revo brand, I would say. So the spotting of, some potential new activity from it was interesting. But in this case, it seems that the only tie to Revo really is the use of its name in the extortion demands. The attack, it's relatively unsophisticated. And the request for the affected company to stop operating in a particular country is somewhat atypical for Revo, which was, didn't appear to have any particular political, affiliations or anything. It was believed to be purely a kind of profit-driven group. So it's kind of an unusual request to come from that group, while the Bitcoin wallet address also had no prior connection to Revo. So it appears more than likely in this case that these are merely copycat attackers who are hoping to probably scare victims into paying by using a name like Revo in their extortion demands, rather than actually signifying, renewed activity or a change in tack for that particular ransomware gang, I would say. But as you said, Dick, there's lots of ransomware activity to discuss this week. So I think there's a few things you wanted to discuss as well.
Yeah, there are a few things, and they're very much odds and ends, but hopefully I can explain why I'm bringing them up. So I just wanted to mention a few things that we'd spotted in some ransomware investigations over the past couple of weeks that might be interesting, because they kind of hit on a lot of the topics that we've been discussing in the past. So ransomware, yes, is a major problem, but the malware, the actual ransomware itself, is quite a small component of the entire attack. And it often appears at the very last minute, sometimes when it's too late to do anything about it. So what comes before the ransomware, therefore, is very important. It's basically a whole chain of tools and techniques that the attackers use to reach their end goal, which is exfiltrating a load of data and encrypting all or as many of as they can of the computers on the network. And obviously, the earlier you stop the attackers in that attack chain, the earlier you get them, the better. So This ransomware attack chain largely consists of three categories of tools. So number one, you have living off the land, and this is where attackers leverage tools that are already on the victim's network and effectively use those tools against them. And these tools can often be simply just components of Windows, like PowerShell or PSExec and whatnot. Number two, you've got dual-use tools, and they are essentially legitimate software, widely used for legitimate purposes, but which can be used for nefarious ends by attackers. And these can range from anything from like network administration tools to remote desktop tools. And they're often lumped in and described as living off the land tools. But I differentiate between the two by saying that with living off the land, the tools are already there. The target has installed them themselves and they use them themselves. Dual use tools is something that the attackers have installed themselves. And finally, the number three, this commodity malware, which is something we discussed very recently on the podcast, which is basically off-the-shelf malware, a lot of which was originally developed as penetration or security testing tools. But in the wrong hands, they're effectively malware because they're meant to emulate malware. So with regard to the first two categories of tools on the list, they present a lot of challenges because they are not inherently malicious by nature. And so while in some circumstances it's possible to block the usage of living off the land or dual use tools, and in even more circumstances it's possible to warn people about their use, it's never going to be as straightforward as pure malware when you can just say, this file is malicious, block, delete. So with all of that preamble gone, I'll get onto the ransomware investigations. The first one involved Avos Locker. And we noticed at least one attacker using Avos Locker, it's obviously a ransomware as a service operation, had begun leveraging PDQ deploy in their attacks. So what is PDQ deploy? It's a legitimate software tool, and its legit usage is to allow its users to manage patching of multiple software packages across a network, in addition to deploying custom scripts. So what the attackers were using it for was executing malicious PowerShell commands on multiple computers on the victim's network using PowerShell Empire to eventually deploy Avos Locker as the payload. And the thing to note here is that in all of the cases we investigated, the attackers appear to install PDQ deploy themselves. The next investigation of interest was around the new Bumblebee loader, which we assume was being used as a precursor to ransomware, although in all of the cases we looked at, the attackers never really got to the payload stage, but all of the TTPs kind of seemed to flag ransomware. These attacks made heavy use of the ConnectWise remote desktop software. I think it was formerly known as Screen Connect, and it was rebranded a little while back. And that's a legit software package. They also made use of AdFind, which is a publicly available tool for querying Active Directory, and Atera, which is another legit software package. It's a remote access tool. And then finally, in the third kind of a set of investigations, we had a few cases where attackers using the Quantum ransomware were using the Ligolo, I think is probably pronounced, which is a publicly available tunneling tool. It was created for pen testing purposes, but we've seen it being leveraged by a lot of espionage and ransomware actors. And they were also using Orclone, which is a legit open source tool was created for its users to manage content in the cloud, but we're also seeing it being used a lot by ransomware actors in order to exfiltrate data. So aside from ransomware, I think the common thread across here is the amount of legitimate software tools that are being used and installed by the attackers themselves. And all of this illustrates the importance, I guess, of number one, knowing what's running on your network, and number two, that if you find something running on your network that shouldn't be there, that it's pretty important to act. So if your organization doesn't use ConnectWise, for example, or Orclone, well, then that needs to be acted on. And indeed, combinations of tools are an even bigger red flag. So to take the first example we cited, yeah, you should probably be worried if you see ConnectWise on your network, but if you see ConnectWise plus AdFind plus Atera, well, then that's almost certainly ransomware. So just thought I would flag them as something interesting that's been going on in ransomware.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think your definition of dual use and living off the land there was good as well, because it can be hard sometimes, all right, to wrap your head around the kind of difference between the two.
I know. And yeah, lots of people kind of can conflate the two, all right. But I think it's maybe important to distinguish, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap it up there. So, but if you've been enjoying our podcast, don't forget to subscribe to avoid missing out on all of our future episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at Threat Intel. And if you'd like to read our latest research, you can check out our blog, which can be found at semantic-enterprise-blogs.security.com/blogs/threat-intelligence. We're going to be back again in 2 weeks' time, but until then, thank you and goodbye.